Welcome to a special episode of Comic Pop Library. The whole crew is here today to visit with Jeff Eddy and Dell Trexel. Jeff is the president and Dell is the vice president of Sofa Wolf Press, home of the Hugo award-winning graphic novel, Digger. We thank both gentlemen for taking the time in their schedule for this visit. Without further delay, let's jump into it. Just to get into the questions, these are going to be also questions that were probably, you guys have answered hundreds of times, but for us and for our listeners, it's our first time, so beg a forgiveness if we make it a little boring for you gentlemen.
Not at all. This is a very different audience for us. I have not done an interview with librarians before, so there you go.
Have you done one with a teenager? My face.
Perhaps. Yeah. Probably.
Probably. You can see, tell that April's the lively one. Logan's the more quiet one. The way the economy is and how it's been going, how did you gentlemen decide to start a publishing company in the midst of all everything that's happening?
We've been going for about 11 years now. So we started back at a time when the economy was a little different than it is now. it's kind of interesting because you talk to a lot of publishing companies and their strategy, a lot of these small indie companies are now, their strategy is sort of find a niche and serve it. And we were doing that 11 years ago for, you know, not knowing any better. So we were ahead of the curve in terms of finding a way to do a business that would survive the downturn.
When you were doing your model for this, did you do research and looking at what was actually selling and trying to decide whether you're going to be purely graphic novel driven or comic book driven, or were you thinking of a different area and then you decided to shift to this direction, or what was your beginning plans to go to comic books and graphic novels?
I would draw the line at thinking. I don't know that we had any thoughts at all when we started it.
It's a very organic process. Comics were not the first thing that that Sofa Wolf published, and I can probably let Jeff talk about what the original ones were, but Digger was the first, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the first novel of sorts. Yeah,
and it was because we had worked with Ursula Vernon on other illustration projects, and she was doing this comic, and it was developing a really good story and a big online following, and even though the comic was free, we saw the potential for distributing it as a printed volume, especially since the nature of the story lent itself more to being read in as a book as opposed to every Tuesday and Thursday, which is when the comic was coming out. And since she had already done the art for it, she said, sure, you know, I don't have anyone else asking, so you guys want to do a print volume? Go ahead. Very, very informal.
So you basically... I'm sorry.
No, good. The initial product that we actually, our sort of flagship publication was a simple short story anthology, and it was really started with as much thought as, you know, having a writer friend who is one of the other people on the board now say, basically, I've got all these stories and I have nowhere to publish them. Okay, let's start a magazine, you know, and so there we go, you know. It was well, let's start a place to publish them and then learn all about all the other things like, you know, accounting and inventory and all that other stuff. Contracts and legal and, yeah, right. Exactly.
Let's print something, then we'll figure out how, what we're supposed to do with everything else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It works for me.
Did you have a seed money to start this up, or were you just going out there and just making it fly in the wind and hoping it took off?
Yep, pretty much just making it fly. I mean, you know, of course, in the first magazine we did was, you know, 80 pages, black and white printed. And it came about right about the time that short-run digital printing was coming on the scene. So we had the advantage that a couple friends' earlier attempts didn't have, which is that we could produce a relatively high-quality product without having to order, like, thousands and thousands of them. Which was the only way to do it prior, because you had to do everything offset in order to get any decent print quality. So we were sort of the right thing at the right time, and we had the right vision for really selecting good quality stuff and putting it out in a good quality package. So the upfront costs were actually fairly modest originally. So
computer and a printer, basically.
Yep. Well, yeah. A computer and the money to pay the print, you know, print company, basically, you know. And a lot of work, obviously.
And then going to conventions and sitting at tables and trying to convince people to buy your stuff. The online sales didn't come for a few years afterwards.
Right.
Did you kind of primarily keep local, or did you hit the big time with Comic-Con real fast, or was that a build-up?
Comic-Con was a build-up. We were really going to a lot of these cons originally anyway, so it was just kind of like, well, we're going anyway. We can get a table and, you know, sell our books.
Cool. Secondary purpose, but I've heard that once you start going there as a business, you have no time to enjoy yourself, though, and look around.
Yeah, the enjoyment changes, definitely. Our enjoyment now at cons is really sort of we work all day, and then at night we usually have, you know, meetings with talent, and we go out to dinner and, you know, drinks, and it's a different kind of thing. It's a...
More sociable now?
Yeah, exactly. It's really more social. And of course, a lot of people would say, oh, well, you know, you get to hang with, you know, this famous artist and you get to hang with, you know, this famous writer and everything else. And that's wonderful. But, you know, really, we're just, you know, talking business. And, but it's fun. But it's a different kind of fun, definitely.
Yeah, we don't stay up until 2 or 3 in the morning at the dances at the conventions because when you have to get up and then man the table in the dealer's room at 9 or 10 the next morning, that kind of, and being awake enough to count money and those sorts of things, it's just kind of counterproductive to do all the crazy stuff that we used to do.
Cool.
Plus we're getting old, so it's a good excuse.
I don't know. If you guys are getting old, you're getting old pretty nicely.
And just get a gallon of orange juice.
I would
get orange juice at the convention. That helps.
I would say something about that old comment, but it would offend the people in this room.
You're probably a decade younger than me, more than likely.
Yeah, perhaps. I don't know. I mean, the only photo that you've seen of us has been heavily photoshopped.
Okay. One of the funner things to read about on your website was how you came up with the name of your company. Would you be willing to tell that in your own words for people and our listeners that... I think it's very unique in how you did that.
Oh, sure, yeah. This is one of the questions that we get a lot. Of course, everyone comments on our name and our logo, which is great. It's really kind of one of those things that I don't even remember at this point how it became the name of the company. But I had a husky at the time. Her name was Rio, and she would perch on the back of the sofa with her paws crossed and looking out at the world as if she was a wolf on a rock and in the majestic wild. So she got the name Sofa Wolf and suited her well, but I decided to use it for the press name. I believe it was just sort of like, we need a name. Okay, that worked.
But for your listeners, husky on couch looks like a little wolf, long time ago, now dead, sad, but still true. The name of our press.
Was that the influence for the type of stories you started publishing from that point, the anamorphic type stories?
Say it was probably chosen more to kind of go along with it. I mean, we were going to these furry cons, you know.
Was the huskies your inspiration of going to the anamorphic type publishing, or was that an idea you had already?
Yeah, we were always interested in anthropomorphic animals in literature and just in movies. I was always fascinated by special effects, where people in movies got to transform into some sort of animal character for to tell a story. And that's what brought us all together. Publishing then was a way of expressing that interest, and huskies were just some another unifying characteristic. We all love huskies and have owned huskies, and so they became a natural symbol of the company.
Well, I know April's, that's one of her dogs that she likes. I think now, though, she's leaning towards the, what was it again?
An Irish wolfhound.
I had a husky when I was a kid, and then we moved to men pens. I have a brood of men pens now.
Two is not a brood.
in a Boston Terrier.
They're not as good for pulling you across the snow when you're skiing.
No, but we don't got to worry about that here.
it either snows,
not as much, no.
Yeah, it either snows a half an inch and we have 6 foot snow drifts, or we get 6 foot of snow. We don't get anything in between.
Sadly, we didn't really get much of a winter last year either, even this far north. So we're hoping for a reprise this coming winter.
I just need it to be hot again. That wouldn't bother me. Christmas in December. Yeah. But warm.
Yeah, it's been. I want to call it unusually warm in Minnesota. My aunt, who lives up there, had to install an air conditioner in their house because they had never had one up until it started getting warm. Huh.
That's weird.
It was a pretty impressive summer. Our ancient air conditioner in the house we live in finally gave up. But fortunately, it waited until the month-long stretch of 90-degree weather had just broken. So we only had to survive 80s for a few days until we got the replacement put Ooh, in.
They got to 90.
We got to
like 115.
Well, yeah, it was 90. It didn't like get out of the 90s for the longest time as far as highs, and some of them were also hundreds, but we rarely get into the 100 and teens up this far north.
I've never heard of a summer that doesn't get into the hundreds.
And I now have a husky next to me who's insisting on scritches.
Ah, you got to give them their time. When you guys were looking at what you were going to go after, did you purposely go after the web comics, or were you taking submissions as well? How did all that germinate? And are you primarily going after web comics now, or can anybody send you something that might be of interest?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that web comics are an absolute for us. There's really a lot of really good stuff being done in the webcomics field, so that's kind of why we kind of fell in with it. And we really have a couple projects that are that way. We've got Digger, of course, and Pridwin, and a couple other titles as well, which are primarily webcomics. But we have Across the Nice, which is the review that you guys originally did, and that was direct to print. And of course, most of our novels are actually direct to print.
And so it was
the nice thing about
we had a debate on we were calling it Pridwin for a while in our review. Yeah. We didn't know.
I'm pretty sure it was me who said Pridwin, but
I've always heard it Pridwin from the creators. So
okay, yeah.
We'll just call it that now.
Okay,
is that her name? Yes.
Okay. Yes, it is.
Sorry, I haven't read it in a while, so.
As you can tell by April's picture, she's a blonde.
Yes.
Yeah.
When it comes to stuff that Richard I'm pulling like, no punches not even on his a daughter fourth there. Interested in. Okay? I am like a beast at school.
Hey, thanks, Richard. I didn't have to mention it in this podcast.
I have straight A's.
You're doing good. I apologize.
Yeah.
I'm
you can tell we're a family
it.
Affair. I apologize, gentlemen. I'm sure you don't have conversations like that.
Yeah, not at all. But yeah, I mean, so we do a lot of other stuff, and we're certainly not just in the webcomics realm, although that is kind of one of the areas that we're pursuing.
Do you still do the
webcomics?
The webcomics
are handy in that they allow people to create content that maybe may have a large audience or may have only a small audience, and it gives them time to work on it and get feedback, and if you know, it they get good feedback and they keep going and they start building a really good story, then we can start to ask, well, hey, is this something that people might also want in a book form? As opposed to for something that hasn't appeared on the web, either the person has to pitch an idea to you and then you go from there and hope that what their idea is actually turns out, or have somebody create a whole comic and then pitch that to you with the hope that, you know, after spending months and months of work on it, that somebody like Silverwall Press will want to publish it and turn it into book form. Going with webcomics in print is a nice way of finding out what is good quality material and has a good quality story going, even if the story hasn't quite wrapped up yet.
Well, I know it's definitely thankful for libraries.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically our medium. Even though we're starting to get more and more into the digital era, people are still coming in wanting that print item. So we definitely appreciate it with the webcomics being printed, because to me, I've always been one of those that I forget about it if I don't have it in front of me. So your company is a blessing for me. I like to have that hard copy right, in my hands.
We hear that a lot. I mean, a lot of people say, oh yeah, I love to find out about webcomics, but I love to read the actual final completed thing. And we've also found that webcomics don't always translate well to a printed medium and vice versa, because like Digger reads really well in a final book form, but it was just sort of painstakingly slow in a webcomics form, because if it reads well on a page, then it's pretty slow development on a webcomic, and if it's a good pace for a webcomic, it's usually pretty fast on page. So,
well, we definitely want to mention a couple of your products tonight and let you have your time in the spotlight with us. I know you've had it before, but you've also already mentioned Ursula Vernon's Digger, just recently won the Hugo Award, and then of course Tegan Gavitt with Norgard. So would you gentlemen like to expound on that and bask in your glory for a little bit?
Bask in their glory, I would say.
Well, you helped out.
We played a part, as I say. Dale, do you want to talk about Digger?
Digger's awesome. Because of Ursula's talent, we got to stand at the very back of the ballroom where the Hugo Awards were announced and scream really loud when her name was read off, and managed to avoid what sounded afterwards to be a very crowded and uncomfortable after party for the Hugo winners and losers. It's fun to rub elbows with some of the bigger names that were showing up there and hanging out to chat with Ursula, and kind of fun to see other people whose name you recognize, like Phil Folio, who does Girl Genius, come by and kind of fanboy over Ursula stuff. So it's just neat to kind of sit back and watch and be a side part of that.
What animal is Digger based upon? Because like I'm thinking like a mole or something.
Digger is a wombat.
Oh, wow.
You
I was
off. Way off.
Digger is a wombat, a female wombat,
Does she eat fruit?
Vegetation.
Yes, yeah. She is vegetarian.
All right.
Though that actually comes into play later on in the story when she has to partake in a ritual with a tribe of hyenas who have just adopted her. And there is comedy. I'm afraid to say too much to spoil it for people haven't actually read it.
One more really quick question. Pronounce it Pridwin?
Yes.
Okay. About that, is she a baby rhinoceros?
No.
And I'm pretty sure... you have to know the last podcast we did on that book.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I did a fair good analysis. We have an argument
as to what the creature actually is.
That's understandable. Pridwin is actually a combination of all the different races on that world. And this becomes important later on, way beyond the book that you're reading. Again, going back to the way that, you know, a good paced webcomic is incredibly fast read in print. So yes, she's actually part unicorn, part
rhinoceros.
All the different critters.
April wants you to say rhinoceros really bad.
Part baby rhinoceros.
Yeah. Are we allowed to say this? Is this not spoilers?
I was going to ask that.
No, it's not.
I was like, we're not spoiling anything. We could always bleep everything out right here. That'd be funny.
But... yeah, it's actually clear enough when you look at it, if you know to look for that, that she's a combination of all the different races.
So technically I was right. Yeah. And all y'all were wrong. Yes, April.
Okay.
I knew I was.
With Pridwin and the Digger, and we've done the Norgard, you guys have a pretty wide range of age groups for reading. Do you plan on keeping that? Are you going to try to hit some of the real young children with some of your books? Or are you going to try to keep it with the teens and adults for your reading levels?
Probably teens and adults, just because they're really, the young children's books are basically being handled really well by a whole lot of other places. I mean, were we to come across one that was really good, we would certainly, you know, consider using it. But we have a project that's called Caterwaul, which is kind of going to be young adult. It's not... We're trying to bridge it. We're trying to make it for sort of young adult that'll be sort of, oh, I don't know, 9 or 10 or 12, around that area. That's a graphic novel as well. And that's going to be a direct-to-print as well, not a webcomic to print. But so we'll certainly do it. Okay. I don't know that it's ever going to be a like, big focus of ours, just because so many other people do it really so well.
Chris here is motioning at us. Let's see what's happening for him.
He sent us a link.
Yeah,
to that.
I sent you a link of our new announcement from back in April when we formally announced that we were doing Caterwaul, so you can see the characters and some early art for that project.
Okay.
That's cool.
I know on some of the... He's trying to twist his monitor around so we can see.
And knock your printer off.
On the website, I noticed when you go to the store, you have the adult titles. I know some of the librarians are going to be concerned about that. How adult do you consider the adult? I mean, is this one that would be acceptable within a smaller community or probably more for a medium to larger community?
Well, the adult content is definitely adult by American terms. Of course, for Americans, you can chop people's head off and do all sorts of violence and people don't label that as adult, which tends to horrify a lot of European readers, but we do have stuff that has explicit sex scenes in it. And we try to focus on stories that they still are strong stories, but where sex or the sexual relationship between characters is an important part of the story.
It's just a natural progression of that story.
Right. And so, for example, we have an annual anthology called Heat, which is short stories, comics, and poetry that... It came out of our general reader anthology. We just had people submitting stuff that were really good stories, but we couldn't include them in the general anthology because of the content. And we decided to create this other anthology so that we could share those stories with people that enjoy them. So there is stuff that's out there, and people can decide if they want to view that or not when they go to the website. There's a pretty, hopefully pretty obvious toggle switch that
Height
chose that.
And I know it's not one of those where librarians have to kind of gauge their community and see what they're going to buy. But if somebody accidentally clicks on one and they get it in, are you receptible to them returning it for either a different title or something that they might have got to accidentally and they don't think is going to work with their community?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's fine. I handle a lot of the stuff, and there would never be any problem with that. We should also state that also on the website, if you do click that adult stuff, you're not going to see anything that you shouldn't see. The adult categories still don't have anything like untoward on them. It's just really sort of helping you to classify the products, you know, therein. So,
and to be honest, a lot of the, you know, having read some things outside of the furry fandom and just general science fiction or fantasy, things you can get in a regular bookstore have surprising amounts of sex in them. And we tend to, as a fandom, be very sort of cautious and self-policing about those sorts of things. And you kind of get your eyes open when you see what goes as acceptable. Another parallel would be some of the art shows at general sci-fi and fantasy cons we've been to. At free cons, they have a very strict delineation. You know, here's the adult stuff, here's the non-adult stuff. And some of these sci-fi shows that I've been to, they have some pretty explicit things just in the general art section. Our website is geared more towards the fact that people are just very aware of that amongst the free fan.
Well, I
sounds like it's also an issue for librarians too, but
true.
Try to make things as clear as possible and so that nobody has any nasty surprises.
Well, most everybody that's reading the material and is comics fans, they pretty much are understandable of that, but some of the librarians that are just getting into it and trying to learn the titles, sometimes they have some difficulties.
So do y'all just deal with the graphic novel based, or do y'all print like stuff without pictures?
Prose?
I don't know what they're called.
We have a pretty wide selection of novels as well, traditional novels. Most of them have, like, illustrations, spot illustrations in
them. Oh, like Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, kind of like that.
That's the only one, probably.
The the fandom that we grew out of is very visually based, and there's a whole lot of just really, really amazing art talent in it. So it's a natural thing to marry sort of even really good writing with really good art.
Just a few more, and then we'll let you gentlemen go. You kind of mentioned already the furry conventions. Have you guys ventured into that arena? Because to me, that would be a natural fit with your publishing the anamorphic characters and that.
Yeah, convention. We actually came out of that. I mean, we were fans before we were business owners, and I was reading a lot of the fanzines back in the late 80s, early 90s, I guess. Which were fanzines, or of course, you know, fan produced publications, usually, you know, just video mimeographed and stapled together. There were a lot of really good ones, but right about the time the sort of fandom was undergoing a kind of turnaround, a lot of the older fans were dropping off and a lot of the fanzines were going away. So we kind of stepped into that gap with the sort of professional view of like taking all this really good art and all this really good writing that we knew was there and providing a professional sort of, you know, highly polished vehicle by which we could, you know, introduce it to some of the people outside of the fandom. Because a lot of this, you know, no one's ever heard of a lot of the writing and art that goes on within that fandom. So our real goal was to bring it out to the rest of the world and maybe to bring some of the rest of the world into the fandom as well. It's an interesting group because, of course, furry is a kind of, I call it a meta genre because it's really kind of like, it's an artificial category which kind of encapsulates everything from, you know, sci-fi to noir to, you know, cartoons to everything. So it's broad.
We can hear you playing with your dog in the background.
Have you been using webcomic lists
for most of their submissions?
To find stuff, yeah.
We're actually at the kind of stage where people bring us things more often than not.
Well, that's kind of nice, then.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we've kind of gotten a good reputation about being, you know, good people, and we do a good job, and we pay people, you know, which is, of course, very important.
That's important.
Okay, how many sacrifices have you had to make with your pay, though, to pay people?
Lots, yeah, definitely. But that's right; they come first. But
tends to happen when you have your own company.
Yeah, exactly. We keep our eyes open. We find stuff sometimes and go to people about it. And we have people bring us, you know, projects. And sometimes they're good, and we work it out, and we go forward with it. And other times, not. You know, we've had everything from people bring us just ideas, and we say, okay, that's a, you know, great idea. Let's help you develop it a little bit and see what it turns into, and then we'll go from there. To people bringing us completed projects, which is kind of... Well, actually, I don't know that we've had a completed project yet, just dropped on our table. But okay.
We just re-released Michael Payne's... I'm blanking out on the title.
Blood Jaguar.
Yeah. Blood Jaguar.
Yeah.
Which was originally published by Tor, and we're publishing a new book that's in the same series, the same world. And since he had the rights available, we repackaged it, got some new art, and getting some of the fandom. It's an old enough book that a lot of the younger people in the fandom will probably not have heard of it. So we can give people a chance to read that and then introduce them to some new content.
Okay.
All right. Do you guys have any teasers for us? Maybe our audience? Anything you might want to
hint at that's forthcoming?
Yeah.
Talking about stuff that's coming up? Or
mm-hmm. Well, I know Ursula's got a new title that you're going to be working on.
She has a new novel title that we're working on, okay. But that's pretty far down the road. Right now we're just working off the high off of Digger, but we've talked a bit about Caterwaul, which is an adventure, kind of a feudal fantasy adventure story. Again, kind of tilted towards the young adult audience. The second book in the Nordgard series, so the follow-up to Across Thin Ice, is currently being painted when we can keep the creators focused on their work.
Oh, please, because I'd love to see how it ends. Or no more.
I want to know about Pridwin.
Pridwin?
Pridwin.
Pridwin.
I'm trying to get used to that.
So I actually just talked to Lynn the other day, and she's getting started on working on the webcomic going forward. We don't know how soon we'll be around to actually doing another print volume of it, because she's going to go a little bit slower with this volume. So we'll have to kind of see on that. But she is going to be moving forward with that story in the webcomics form, and we'll get a print edition out when it's ready. But
and I noticed something unique on your comic that I know when I mention it, Logan's going to get interested, but you actually made a trading card game of Norgard.
Yes, it. Yes, yes. It's actually
not technically a trading card game.
Right. It's actually not a trading card. It's actually a complete deck playable out of the thing. It's a, and you'll have to excuse me because I'm not a gamer, so I'm stating this from rote, but it's a team-based board game sort of card game with environmental challenge elements.
Okay.
Hero click style.
Hero click style.
Sounds okay. Like it. I'm a Magic player, so
okay.
The card game appeals to me. So
yeah. So this is really, you have a series of location cards which you lay out in order to make a randomized map that has like environmental challenges on it, and you play as characters from the book as a team, and you collect items and try to fulfill your mission, which means you have to traverse the map and deal with all the environmental conditions together using your shared skills. So it's really sort of the team against the board, not as much the team against each other. And it was created really as a way to interest gamers in the universe of the books, and the art's really awesome. We're just getting around to reprinting. The first one was a sort of prototype printing. We had no idea how it was going to be received, but you know, we sold out of it pretty quick. So we're working on the next printing of it, which is going to have a few modifications and improvements, you know, nothing major, but some better colors here and there to tell the cards apart, things like that.
And what would we be able to purchase that?
We're still working on that. We need to get the pricing to a point where we can distribute. The first time we couldn't even distribute because it was really, we were making a few dollars per deck because, you know, it was just sort of to get it out there. We will be looking into distribution options for the new version.
But of course, you can buy it on our website once we get them back in stock.
Okay, because we'll probably be interested in doing that and maybe talking about that. Because I know Logan and Matt and Chris are both all gamers here, so they're kind of interested in that area of the fandom.
I don't know if I'm a board gamer.
He likes the toggles.
I want to push buttons when I play games.
Well, gentlemen,
the creator of the game is from up in North Dakota, so perhaps we can send him down and run a game with you guys.
That sounds awesome.
That would be great.
That would be cool, but I don't know if we'd want to drive that far or fly that far.
Dakota's only like 8 hours.
Just eight.
He's probably crazy enough that he'd hitchhike if he had to.
Oh,
well, I know all the roads seem to go east west across the prairies. Can you actually go north and south?
On a few of them.
On a few of them, yeah. Of course, you may not run into a town for about an hour and a half, but
you can go south to Oklahoma.
The direction south.
Oh yeah, my goodness. You're all from right. Oklahoma and you don't know that?
No, I'm from Lakin.
No, actually, you're not.
Well, Jeff and Dell, we appreciate everything. Having you guys come on is just one of the highlights for me. I think the guys are the same way.
Yeah. Well, and gal. Don't forget the gal.
Oh, April is
our pleasure. It's always fun to talk to our fans of various sorts and get their responses to what we do.
Well, we definitely want to keep in touch with you gentlemen, and if you're still willing, we're definitely willing to send out more reviews for you. I hope some of the ones, I know the Diggers one that I don't know if the other guys will like as much as me. I didn't select that one first because the art style, I didn't know if they'd be really into that. That's why I kind of went with Norgard and then the Pridwin first. Kind of.
It is good.
Logan's already
I'm
read
glad
some
you went
of
with
it,
those
so.
First, though. They were. I enjoyed them.
Yeah, I really enjoyed them. If nothing else, and we said this in the podcast in the review that the artwork on those is phenomenal, and just, you know, we enjoy that as much as you do reading the story.
Well, it's good to hear. I mean, yeah, it's Nordgard's going to be a great story when it's completed, and so is Pridwin. Pridwin has a bit further to go. It's going to be a lot more story to Pridwin. But
good.
And if you guys don't want to wait to pass around copies of Digger, you can always go to diggercomic.com and read it on the screen if you're not tired of looking at computer screens all day.
I think that's where Logan's been reading
it. For two of us, it's our job.
Yeah. But we do appreciate you taking the time out this evening. We let you go, so we don't want to take too much of your
evening. We appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. It's we actually don't do a lot of podcast, do a lot of verbal interviews. So,
especially as publishers, we try to push our creative talents out to go do interviews and podcasts and things. But we lowly publishers don't get the limelight very often.
Well, you're an integral part of the machine, so you can't have one without the other.
Say, without publishers, we wouldn't have books, we wouldn't have jobs.
Well, you guys wouldn't. I would still be able to get a job.
We're wanting to get the word out there for anybody that's doing a great job, and I think you gentlemen are. So
we appreciate that very much.
Yeah, we appreciate that quite a bit. Thank you.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you again. You have a good evening.
Yeah.
You guys have a good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.